Operator here. Welcome to the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. In just a second, we're going to connect you to the cyberspace. So hold on to your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye.
Hello and welcome. This is your host, Alex, and you have reached the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. On today's episode, we will be discussing the latest Matrix Resurrections, including a whole bunch of spoilers. So be warned. Today on the show, we have a complete newcomer to the Matrix, my lovely wife, Helena. You may also recognize her voice in the intro and outro. Welcome, Helena. All right, so we just watched together the Matrix Resurrections movie a second time. You were there with me watching the original when we watched the premiere in London, in the BFI IMAX in London. That was exciting, but I know you had a lot of questions on that first viewing. So we're going to be discussing kind of the characters, the themes, some questions, and hopefully answering some of your questions. No stupid questions, so whatever you want to ask, you can. And I might not have all the answers either. I've only watched this twice, and there's a lot to unpack, so let's get right into it.
Awesome. I'm excited to explore the themes and also talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it'll be really fun picking your brain because I know you are very passionate and a super fan of The Matrix.
Yeah, I'm definitely a super fan. And it surprised me after I watched the first one. I thought it was really great on the latest Cyberpunk Matrix podcast blog. I gave it a 10 out of 10, even though I know it's not perfect. But for me, it's pretty much close to perfect. I just really enjoyed it. And so it surprised me to see there are a lot of people who don't like this film, like at all, or they have a lot of complaints with it that I don't know if I share the same or not. Maybe it's just a difference in opinion, but I'm curious to see for someone who's not a super fan, what does the layman person think? So, yeah.
I feel like for a lot of super fans, this is an amazing film because they make so many references to the first few films, especially the first film. It's very meta, this movie. There's a lot of flashback scenes when you're introduced to new characters like Agent Smith for the first time, Jonathan Groff, who I think played the part amazingly, just so good. But the first time you're introduced to him, you know, there's a clip of the old Agent Smith. There's a lot of references to characters and scenarios that go back to the first movie. And I think for a newbie, for someone who hasn't seen The Matrix, or if they have but only once, you know, this is not a standalone film, I feel like. I feel like this can't be a standalone film because of all the references and all the – there's so many lines that reference the first one in a very clever meta way, which very good, very clever. But as someone who's not very passionate about The Matrix, it was hard to follow some of the things. And I feel like there were a lot of things I couldn't get. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not familiar with the first movie.
That's interesting. But here's the thing. Do you feel like not knowing the first, second, and third films very well stopped you from understanding a lot of what was happening? Or was it just hard to understand because it was a complex, confusing story in general? I mean, because I feel like, yeah, it's true. It does reference things a lot. But because of that, it shows those cutscenes, so you see, you know, like if you have the characters saying that, you know, we died, or they're thinking about their death, they show a very quick scene of them dying. And that actually was from movie 3, not from movie 1. But you don't need to have seen the whole movie just to know, okay, there's a scene where they get impaled in some ship. And that's at some point in the past three movies, and that's what they're thinking about now. Or if they're thinking about, I don't know, Smith saying Mr. Anderson, at some point he yells Mr. Anderson. It doesn't even matter which of three movies it was beforehand,
right?
But you see the clip so that you know what they're referencing. And so some of the stronger fans said that, you know, there's too much throwbacks to the old ones. Like, we didn't need those clips. The clips was overkill to reference. But you're saying that even with Eclipse, you didn't quite understand as is, right?
Yeah. Just the video game reference. I mean, there was a whole montage in the middle of the film where they made all of these references to the first film. Very meta things, like they said, you know, one of the lines was, "This cannot be another reboot. Why not? Reboot sell." Yeah. And I feel like they were really trying to make a reboot. And it was very clear that they were recycling old material, I felt. Mm. They were recycling old content, but, you know, adding clever bits to it on top. Like, you know, I thought the whole character of Jude, which was his manager, I think, Neo's manager, or he handles him. Mm-hmm. He had this very manic energy.
Thomas Anderson's manager, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I thought it was very clever, the writing about how that character tried to interrupt Neo from thinking about anything, mm-hmm. you know, to question anything. Like, he was not talking nonstop mm-hmm. to try to get Neo's attention. And the same with the kids, Trinity's kids, right? They were always trying to get Trinity away from Neo, but close enough to generate that power between them for the machine. So I think there was a lot that was really clever that they added to the film. Mm-hmm. I thought that was one of the pros of the film, was like that connection point.
Yeah.
There was a lot of new things, but in general, I think it was overall confusing mm-hmm. with the video game element, how he's a video game creator and, you know, talking about the Matrix, like that whole segment I didn't understand. Same mm-hmm. thing with, you know, Agent Smith picking up the gun, starting the fire in the building, and he shoots Neo. Like, all of that was so confusing. Same with, you know, Morpheus coming back, that mm-hmm. that first scene at the beginning where Morpheus is in the video game and he's an agent mm-hmm. and then Bugs comes in and rescues. It's just very confusing. And if you don't know the movies or you haven't seen them, it's kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah. And that those things were confusing for me as well the first time around. I didn't understand, like, he looks like Morpheus, but he didn't look like Morpheus. So I said, okay, is he or is he not? I don't know. And I didn't know that he was a mix of both and a creation from Neo until halfway through the movie. I understood, oh, okay, like, it came from his video game. And also, like, through a good part of the movie, I didn't know what a modal was. I don't know if you caught that. A modal is something that does exist in creating video games, where they create, it's like a mini simulation within a video game to test it out.
Mm.
And so that's what Thomas Anderson did, that he created this modal, a looping modal, and then he put the Morpheus Agent Smith mix character in that as a subconscious cry for help, which is really confusing.
Interesting.
And that took some time. I mean, I had to read some things online to fully understand that. Mm. I don't know. I feel like because I've been so into this, a lot of it is explained to me before I can really process it myself. Just with the things I've been seeing before the movie. And then I only was able to watch it once, and then I had a lot of questions I couldn't answer because I had to rewatch it. And then in the discussion forums I read, it kind of was explained to me in different places, like Neo Matrixology, for example, also great YouTube channel where he explains some of these things. And it was, you know, it's really interesting to kind of see that. Yeah, but I wanted to go back to what you said about a reboot. So you felt like this movie was like a poorly thought out reboot of the first movie. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I mean, I think there was some clever twist to it, you know, like Swarm Mode. I feel like we should let your audience know that this is definitely not spoiler free.
I already did from the beginning.
Okay, cool.
there's going to be spoilers. Spoilers be warned. Yeah.
But just the Swarm Mode, you know, with the zombies at the end and how the people in the fake world. Is that the Matrix? Is the fake world? Yes. In the Matrix world, you know, these people are jumping out of buildings. I think that was really interesting and original.
That was definitely something new, that it was a new way. I mean, the first three movies, it was always fear the agents.
Right.
And the other one, the other humans are just normal. But in the first three movies, any human could morph any human can morph and become an agent temporarily. And then if you kill an agent, it reverts back to the original human body within the Matrix.
Hmm.
So I think you had a question at some point about, well, we'll get into that later. That's, they knew who was the bad guy because the agents all wore suits with the sunglasses, and it was very clear that there were an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this one, they decided that the agents would not be super strong, but rather they could be anybody. And
yeah.
So that's why you didn't know who it was and who wasn't. You didn't know who was human, who was a machine.
Yeah.
I thought that was very clever. You'd want to hide that. You wouldn't want to broadcast it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there were some original things. Like, I do believe this was a reboot. It felt very recycled. I don't think they needed to make a new film, to be honest. However, I love how they added a big love story.
Yeah.
How it's better when they're together. They're more powerful when they join forces together. I thought that theme was really beautiful. I loved, you know, bringing the modern day into it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm always laughing with you about how the sunglasses in the 90s are just so atrocious. Like, those glasses are just terrible.
I liked most of those sunglasses. I mean, it depends, because everyone wore a different kind of sunglasses. And I like the sunglasses from the old trilogy better in
general than
the new ones. Yeah.
No, I think that they're so bad. And I think the modern take of it, the rounder, the cat eye, just the blue hair on Bugs, you know, like it was so modern and so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure in 20 years this is going to appear outdated, just like mm-hmm. the 90s, you know, version does today. But I think it felt like a reboot. They didn't need to make it. And honestly, while I think it was good enough and entertaining enough for the money spent at the movie theater, I don't think they need to continue it just because it left off on a nice note. And I don't know what else there is more to say about this Matrix world.
Well, I have a lot of things to say about that. The first thing is, I think we need as much Matrix content as possible all the time.
Of course you do, hon.
We need a TV series. We
of
need
course.
A video game. There was actually like a sample video game to show off a type of video game engine called Unreal Engine.
Mm.
So it was like a mini video game. You could only play on the Xbox and the PlayStation. But I want to go back to the reboot because you said it felt like a reboot. For me, and you felt that way because of the way they were talking about their previous trilogies in these like marketing scenes, right? With Christina Ricci, for example, and
mm-hmm.
these people. I didn't feel that way at all. And perhaps because I know it a little bit closer, I think they were making fun of people who wanted them to make a continuation to this film for the past 20 years.
Mm.
So remember, they made the trilogy. What happened was they made the first movie, Matrix, in 1999. And then it took them 4 years to 2003 in order to come out with the sequels. But they did.
Yeah.
They filmed both sequels back to back all at the same time. And then they released both films in the same year in 2003. So
mm-hmm.
Reloaded and Revolutions. And then they said they were done.
Right.
And then Warner Brothers, right, their parent company, kept on saying, hey, do you want to make another one? Because we made so much money before.
Mm.
And all these people were saying, oh, you should make another one because we want to see it again or because we want to make money. And they're always like, no, no, no. For 20 years,
right?
They said no. And then they went to do other things. So first, I mean, it used to be the Wachowski brothers, and then one of them transitioned and then the other one did. So they're obviously dealing with other things. And they made many other movies, including V for Vendetta. And then Cloud Atlas, Speed Racer, so other projects, Jupiter Ascending, which was not very well received, but most of the other ones were. And then they met writer David Mitchell and Alexander Himon as well. And so when they wrote this, the reason why they wrote this, why they came back to this, Lana reported, you know what happened, Helena? You know what changed? Lana's parents died.
Wow. And that was the motivation and the inspiration to create.
So when Lana's parents died, she had this like gaping wound in her.
Yeah.
She was grieving.
Yeah.
She had these two people, one after the other, very quickly.
It happens with a lot of writers.
And so she didn't know how to deal with that grief. And so what she said was that all of a sudden, one night, this story came to her that she can't bring back her parents, but she can bring back Trinity and Neo, these two characters that meant so much to her. So she came up with this story and she asked Lily, and Lily said, no, I don't want to have any part of it. That's why it was just Lana.
Yeah.
And Lana wanted to bring it back because it was her way of dealing with her grief.
Yeah.
It wasn't a money grab.
Yeah.
But in her, you know, typical way, she makes fun of the Warner Brothers quite literally.
Right.
Saying, we're going to do... And actually, I thought that was an interesting thing that in the movie it says... Warner Brothers is doing a sequel with or without you. You can either be part of it or you can't. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me wonder, was that true? Did Warner Brothers actually go to Lana Wachowski and say, hey, we're doing a new one, or we're doing some sort of continuation, whether you're involved or not, because we really want to make a sequel to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe she decided, well, if I am able to be part of this, at least I can have one hand on the steering wheel. And at the same time, process this grief and tell this really interesting story that just came to me.
Mm.
And so she makes a film making fun of reboots in the film itself.
Yeah.
So it's not remaking it's not making another film just to make money. And I
didn't get that impression.
Yeah.
I didn't get that vibe.
Yeah.
It felt like rehashing old themes, the same story structure.
Yeah.
Of Neo finding weird things in his life. You know, Neo comes out of the mirror. I don't know if he does that in the first film. He
goes into the mirror, but yes,
right.
There are mirrors.
He offers the pill. You know, he talks about the real world, you know, versus the other world. And he talks about choice, and the choice is yours, but you've already made the choice. You know, choice is an illusion.
Yeah.
They're similar themes of self-sovereignty and choice. And, you know, it's even with the fighting sequence in the Japanese
the dojo,
literally the same thing. He's trying to aggravate him to get him to show his power and show his strength, and it's the same theme from the first one. And and so when I was in the theater watching this the first time, I was like, I've seen this before. I've seen this exact choreography. Maybe not the exact choreography, but the exact
The choreography was very different, and it definitely was not as good. That's something that we can talk about later. The biggest detractor, even without talking to anybody else, that I came up with objectively on my own, was like, I was a little disappointed about the action, the choreography.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So what, I guess maybe we should talk about maybe the good and the bad of the movie. What do you think?
Are there some characters that you really stood out to you, or some characters that you really liked?
Oh yeah. I have characters I loved, characters I didn't love. Bugs. I thought she was absolutely incredible.
I
fell in love with her the minute she came on screen.
Yeah.
I immediately was like, she's a Pisces energy. Looked up her natal chart. She's a Virgo, of course. August 30th. But Bugs was immediately likable.
Yeah.
Immediately likable. Like, she had this emotional warmth on camera.
Yeah.
You were rooting for her. I feel like you were rooting for her the minute she came on screen.
She feels
and so,
like, I think I said this to you in the film and the first time we saw it, is that she feels like someone you want to be friends with.
Yeah.
She's very like approachable and friendly, and she has, I don't know, this kind of American British mixed accent. I can't really place it.
And
her action scenes were great. She was in a Marvel series called The Iron Fist, where she does in the series, she has a dojo where she where she trains in kung fu or karate or something like this. And so I've seen her do a lot of martial arts before.
Yeah.
And I knew that she'd be good, and I think she killed it.
For me, it wasn't really the action scenes at all. It was more her like her acting, like the more emotional scenes.
Oh, sure.
Rather
than
the action.
I mean, both. Yeah.
I thought she was great. Immediately likable. Like, audience can connect with her right away. I love that they started with her and the guy that she was working with. I loved them. I love how at the beginning she says one of the first lines in the movie is, it feels really familiar. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're going back to the Matrix. This is a familiar world that we're going back to. I really loved Agent Smith. I thought Jonathan Groff was so good in this. I've seen a lot of his work, and I'm usually not a fan of his, actually. But in this film, he played the bad guy so well. Very subtle acting, like a very slight move of the eyes, you know, or a slight, very soft facial expressions I thought were very captivating. And to be honest, just as a Matrix newbie, as someone who's not in the Matrix world, I have to say, I don't get the Keanu Reeves obsession. I know the internet loves him and he's super likable, but I don't know. I just felt like he played Neo so flat. It was very one-dimensional. There wasn't like this emotional arc, or, you know, you didn't see this before and after. It just, he played it very one note. And like every line, it was the same. It was, he would say the same, you know, same phrase.
Same delivery.
Yeah, same delivery for every line. And I couldn't stop noticing that. And the same with Niobe. You know how I feel about
Jada Pinkett Smith. Yeah.
You know how I feel about that. I feel like the prosthetics, the makeup, they needed to hire an older actress. I don't know why they felt so compelled to have her sit in the makeup chair for 5 hours every morning to get her prepped for camera. They should have just hired someone that's older, because it felt very forced. It felt very fake. Her acting, the older voice of an old person. Right.
Yeah.
It was so cringe. It was a complete detractor. I couldn't stop noticing it. I couldn't focus on the dialogue. It was such a distraction for me. But so Jonathan Groff, Bugs was amazing. Priyanka Chopra, gorgeous. Amazing acting. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, but about her acting, though, do you feel like she acted?
Oh, yeah. I thought she was great. I thought she played it really well. I mean, her scenes were so short. I feel like she didn't get enough camera time, personally.
How do you feel about Carrie Ann Moss playing Trinity?
I like Carrie Ann Moss. I think she playing Trinity works well. I feel like, in general, Trinity, or maybe it's the actress, I don't know if it's the character or the actress, but I feel like she came across as a bit cold, not as warm, like that warmth was missing. And I feel like a lot of lead characters need to have a warmth around them because the audience needs to fall in love with them. And I feel like I couldn't connect or fall in love with Trinity because that warmth was missing. But overall, I think she's a great actress. I thought she played the part well. Her action scenes are also amazing. Like, she's really good at action, and just her eyes. Her eyes are beautiful, and you want to look at her all the time when she's on screen because she's so beautiful to watch.
Yeah, I feel like she's very serious and deep. And I hear what you're saying about Keanu Reeves. He's been gotten the criticism before that he can't act, that he's kind of just a flat, one-sided kind of delivery. I can see how that makes sense for some situations, but I always felt like he did a really good Neo, because Neo is someone who is sleeping all of his life, and then he wakes up, and so he can't really believe the things that he's seeing, and he's kind of shocked, and so I don't know. I feel like for him, it made sense. Like, he can play a shocked character. You know, he plays shock pretty well.
The
emotional parts, I can see it wouldn't be, it's not quite as compelling. And I understand also that what you're saying about Carrie Ann Moss. I do feel that her delivery has always been a little bit, I wouldn't say cold, but like kind of reserved, sort of.
And maybe held back. Yeah, like, she's restricting something.
Like, she has this deep inner life within
her.
And you can't really see that, and so she hides that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I felt about Carrie Ann Moss and about Keanu Reeves. I think, and so he's just very dedicated to action, and so I think a lot of people like him. I mean, for example, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the John Wick series. Okay, so he plays basically an assassin, and the first John Wick film was meant to be, you know, just pure action, basically. Yeah. Just like killing, fighting, not much plot, not much emotion. It's really just killing. But he did it so well. And the choreographer, Chad Stahelski, who, by the way, plays Chad, the husband.
Oh, of Trinity.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the husband of Trinity is named Chad, the character. Great. His actual name is Chad Stahelski, and he does the choreography for John Wick.
John Wick.
And they did that so well that it made so much money, and they made a second and now a third one, and now they're coming out with a fourth one.
Wow.
Which I personally...
With Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I mean, he's the main star. And that's what's fueled a lot of the Keanu sauce, as they call it, him coming back and doing this again.
Yeah.
Which I personally, I like John Wick, but it really is just an action film, I feel like. Some people don't feel that way, but I just feel like I don't understand why it's such a big deal. Yeah, the action is good, but you need something like The Matrix where it's balanced between action and other things, you know?
So what did you think about the action in this movie? Because I remember you said it was kind of disappointing for you, was the action sequences.
Yeah, so that's the one thing that I was a bit disappointed by. I know, Helena, you're not a huge fan of action sequences, but action in movies is a bit like a ballet. It's like a choreography. That's why I call it a choreography. It's not fighting. It's choreography because you have to pull your punches at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really like this art to dancing and fighting. And Keanu said that he feels like he expresses himself through his body when he does the fights.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to, there's a certain type of fighting style that this really great choreographer from China called Yan Wuping did. He did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So those kind of like flying with wires.
Cool.
Kind of acrobats.
Yeah.
And he did most of the choreography for the first three.
The first three. Because I remember those kinds of action sequences.
Yeah. And so it was him and I think Chad Stahelski, again, who were doing the action sequences, if I'm not mistaken. And so that kind of beautiful flying in the air and the real kung fu, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then in this movie, he says, I know kung fu, but then a lot of the fights, it didn't have that same beautiful choreography that we knew and loved with long shots. There's one thing in particular that I also don't like so much about John Wick. Sure, it's good action and there are guns, but it's a lot of cuts, a lot of quick, short scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that as much in my films. I want to see one long, clear take.
Yeah.
And in John Wick also, they have a bunch of long takes with him, so that's good. But with The Matrix, I mean, you had a couple really fight sequences, like the zombie mode version. And then you had the fight with the Merovingian, and there were so many quick cuts that you couldn't really see what was going on. And I was really disappointed. That, the quick cuts and losing Yuan Woping. And so I do think that maybe the pandemic played a part of this because they filmed what they needed to in San Francisco and then they went through the pandemic. And so they had difficulty filming in Germany. And I think they would have liked to bring in some really good Chinese choreographers from Hong Kong, for example, but they just couldn't because of coordinating all that through COVID.
I feel like I now know a little new thing about you because you love black and white films. You love old movies on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
And I think I know why now. You like those long shots. I never realized that was something you prefer in your
films.
Yeah,
that's true. And nowadays, it's very hard to find good films.
It is.
They're like if you get a movie with a long shot, especially if they just keep on going. There is a war movie that was about that.
Or Birdman, right? That was
Birdman.
One continuous.
Yeah, where you can't tell when they cut it.
Yeah.
That World War II movie, I forget what it was called, but it got some Oscars for that thing.
Yeah.
and, you know, Children of Men and other movies where it's just one continuous shot that's more
modern. Yeah, we went and saw that movie, the war movie. It was like 1918 or 1914, yeah. Something like that. We saw that in the movie theater. It was awesome. That's right.
Yeah, because it was one continuous shot.
It should have won the Oscar that year. I think it didn't, and I was really disappointed. It should have. Really? Okay. Yeah. That was an amazing film. Those long shots. We need more of them in cinema, I feel like.
So being able, not this shaking camera to show that things are moving around and happening, but a clear shot of the action is what I would have liked to see. But I mean, I'm going to accept it for what it is. It's fine.
Yeah. So should we talk about maybe Neil Patrick Harris's character, the analyst?
Well, we can, but maybe we should move on because we're running out of time to the different things like the themes. Well, I mean, Neil Patrick Harris's character, it was very major in this film. I really liked his acting. I'm a huge Neil Patrick Harris fan. I loved his dialogue in the middle of the movie, and it just reminded me of the kinds of very witty, on-point analysis of culture kind of types of dialogues that I learned to expect from the Wachowskis. And so I really enjoyed that.
I love how he talked about desire and fear and how, like, psychologically, hope and despair are the same almost energetically. Mm. Like, they operate at the same level. Mm. I think he was talking about despair and hope in regards to getting the energy in the pods, fascinating. All that psychological stuff was absolutely fascinating with the analyst. Question though about the cat. He kept grabbing the cat. What did the cat symbolize, do you think?
I'm not sure what the cat symbolized. My theory is that it seems like every time that he grabbed onto the cat, by the way, is called Deja Vu, because in Matrix 1, Neo notices a cat walk by twice exactly the same way. And then he says, oh, I'm experiencing deja vu. And that's a sign that the agents changed something in the makeup of the building, and therefore the agents were coming. And so they call the cat deja vu as a callback to the first film again. But I noticed that every time that the analyst has the cat in his hands, he's doing some sort of time shift or power control thing. Mm. And during the brawl in Simulate, what a clever call.
Yeah, that was clever.
Once he gets the cat, he's able to like disappear. And before that, he's kind of like afraid for his life, whatever kind of life he has, which is weird because you would think that he's kind of impervious to damage. Mm. So I think the cat somehow gives him some sort of power.
So what about some of the themes of The Matrix? I wrote down some really interesting themes that I noticed with this movie that I thought were really powerful and, you know, ideas that we can walk away with that will leave us questioning things for a while. What did you think about some of the themes?
Well, I felt like the first thing I noticed was the big theme I noticed was loops, ooh, repetitions, things that are coming over again. So you have, I mean, there's so many examples of things happening again. If you go on in a more surface level perspective, you say, oh, they're doing this because they did it in Matrix 1, or they're doing it because they did it in Matrix 2. But I thought it was more of a, every person is on this treadmill where they're doing the same thing in their lives over and over again without really questioning why.
Questioning, yeah.
And so going like, so it's kind of like Matrix 4 goes back to Matrix 1, 2, and 3. Characters are doing the same things they've done before in these constant loops that we find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a meta-analysis of real life.
Yeah. I definitely thought there were a lot of references to routine. Like the red pill versus the blue pill. Are you going to break routine and become aware and learn the truth and have that power of self-sovereignty? Or are you going to choose the blue pill, which is remaining comfortable and staying, you know, staying in your routine, not breaking out, breaking free from past patterns? And also, I feel like the blue pill is learning – is not learning the truth and being ignorant and remaining happy, but remaining comfortable. There's a certain unease that comes to us when we remain comfortable and content. Mm. Whereas when we break free and choose to learn the truth, take that red pill, it's like this new world can open up to us and set us free. And there are a lot of themes of routine for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved the theme of social media. I feel like there was a lot of mm-hmm. connections with social media. Specifically, we just look at Facebook now, Meta, how it's turning into, you know,
mm-hmm.
Meta wants to profit. Social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube even. These are companies that are making money off of us. The longer we watch YouTube videos, the longer we scroll or go through Instagram stories, the more these companies are profiting and making money from us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with the machines in the Matrix, you know. The machines generate power from us.
Mm-hmm.
We give them power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's – when I saw this movie, it was like I walked away from this film asking myself, where am I giving my power?
Mm.
How am I giving my power to what? You know, who gets this energy that I am cultivating within myself? And it made me really question things like how often am I spending time and giving my energy to social media or to the internet, to these companies, you know, Meta. It's really profound. I love The Matrix for that simple reason that the messages are profound, but simple.
Yeah. And I think a major part of the beauty of The Matrix is that they created a very compelling metaphor that was vague enough that anyone it asked questions, and then anyone who watched it interpreted it in their own way, just like any art should, and comes to their own conclusions. I mean, I thought it was really interesting for this film. It was talking about emotions, and the therapist and the analyst saying, you know, people don't really care about facts. They care about feelings.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was very apropos.
Very.
Post-Trump.
Yeah. And COVID
And COVID, but like with fake news. So first we had this fake news stuff with Trump, and then other dictators or you know, presidents or whatever in different countries saying what's true is not true, and then questioning truth for political gain. And then we have COVID times where we don't really know what to do yet, and we're questioning scientific community, we're questioning our government, we're questioning everything because we don't really know what to make of these new changes in this pandemic years.
Yeah.
And so it felt very fitting for these times that this film is basically saying people don't want the truth.
Mm.
They just don't want to feel a certain way.
Mm.
And that's all that they care about. And as long as you get them feeling a certain way, not only will they not care about the truth, but they'll become complacent and then easily controllable. I mean, what does that say?
The element of truth is the element of choice is a big one in this movie. You know, even just looking at Trinity and her arc in the movie, her making the choice to leave what is comfortable and secure and safe for her, which is her family, her kids, and her husband, which are obviously all programmed by the analyst. It's all – this whole film really shows us, you know, are we willing to be empowered to be within our own self-sovereignty and to break free and to make our own choices? And I love this quote that was said by Bugs in the middle of the movie. She said, "The Matrix weaponizes every idea, every dream, everything that's important to us." And I feel like capitalism, you know, social media – all the things that are trying to control us, the media in general, trying to control us and our thoughts and our emotions especially.
Mm-hmm.
Just so powerful. And, you know, the analyst at the very end, Neil Patrick Harris, he says, you know, the sheeple.
Yeah.
You know, the sheeple, they don't they want to be controlled. They don't want their freedom. They don't want to be empowered. They they honestly just want to be comfortable. And they want to – they crave comfort to certainty. I just – so good. Like, I love this movie just for all the messages. Like, I'm not a huge action person. I don't really like, you know, the sci-fi world at all. But the messages of The Matrix are so profound and can inspire and wake people up.
Yeah.
Especially right now with everything going on in the world. Like, this is a movie to wake up people. And I just thought it was so apropos to the times.
Yeah. I kind of just like throughout the film, I wanted to just like, I think I will eventually pause the film during certain key lines and just write down all these like classic quotes, because I
wrote down a bunch.
I remember a lot of them. Yeah. I remember a lot of them from the trilogy, but they're like, oh, these are so good. And I wish I could like, oh, and there it's gone, because it's like, it's a fast pace. With Bugs, for sometimes it was hard for me to understand what she was saying. She was saying it so fast, and the pacing is really fast. Although I was surprised with the pacing for this time watching, since I knew what was going to happen, it didn't feel as fast as the first time.
Because
the first time I was watching, I was like, wait, they're going where and what's happening and what now? And it was so fast, especially with the music. And this time I felt like it slowed down a bit because I knew what was coming. But yeah, it's definitely a statement of our times. And like, I don't know how you felt, but like the scenes of them always going to a coffee shop and getting lattes, the scenes of them going to the gym, you know,
those were my favorite scenes, and those were the most comfortable.
But no, but like, they're also like, they
had a blue tint to it.
No, like, yeah. I feel like people didn't do those things as much back in the day. Like when the Matrix 99 came out.
No, they do it now.
Yeah. And so it's like a statement of the times, that
these times,
there's a certain kind of coffee shop they go to.
Yeah.
And when Thomas Anderson is working at this company, his peers speak a certain way.
Fascinating.
And everyone is. And so like, I remember thinking about this, and I was thinking of writing it in my in-depth review, that when Thomas Anderson and Tiffany sit down at that coffee shop and have their lattes, and she's saying, I'm going to be a bit wild, I'm going to have a cortado, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're sitting down and they're having a discussion, and it felt like they were both swept up with this new modern world, and they didn't really know what to do with it.
Right.
You know, and I feel like a lot of middle-aged people nowadays, they don't know what to make with TikTok. And with like these new, I mean, Starbucks has been around for
virtual
a while.
Virtual reality.
But like, yeah, virtual.
All the new things.
Yeah, like, what is these video games? I don't understand what's going on here. And so it's like, I don't know, I felt like two people not knowing what to do in this new world within this Matrix world.
Mm. I have to say, one of the good things that's changed from the 90s to now is, I think in the first film, Thomas Anderson, Neo's character, is working in a cubicle.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, those were the rage. Like, all the movies had those tiny little cubicles in a huge building with this big floor and these fluorescent lights, you know, overhead. And in this film, it was like a modern office with, you know, floor to ceiling glass windows, and it was more communal. I remember Christina Ricci's character was standing up and everyone was sitting around a table and discussing ideas, being more collaborative. Yeah, I feel
armchairs. There's a Nerf gun. Which
there's a Nerf gun.
You never see that in the corporate world. Yeah.
I just feel like our generation, millennials, Generation Z, is bringing forward this new work environment of collaboration, community, creative solutions, resourcefulness. These are things that our generation is really bringing forward into the workforce now. And it's really cool to see that translated on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you have even more of that with a pandemic, that there people are questioning, well, do I really have to come into the office? Can I just do this in my pajamas from home if the quality of work is the same?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no, I don't actually have to commute into work or go into this building or wear this suit. I can still do what needs to be done. And it's really encouraging people to like rethink their workplace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the things I really loved about this movie was the blue tint instead of the green tint. And near the end of the film, when Neo is walking towards the coffee shop, ready to fight, you know, the analyst, you start seeing this green tint that's layered onto the blue tint and the color grading of the film. But the first half of the film, it's all blue. Like, everything's blue. You can even see it in their clothes, on their skin. Like, everything's blue tint. Even like little things, like the analyst's glasses are blue frames.
Oh, I see. But
Bugs's hair.
Whole thing, just like colors in.
Well, no, the color grading itself too. The color grading. I'm a video editor, so like when I look at films, I'm often studying the editing and how they did it. And with this film, there's like a blue tint on the first half of the film.
Oh.
And you see, you know, Bugs has blue hair, the blue glasses, even the train the walls of the train are blue. There's just so many little blue elements to this movie. Mm. And then at the end of the film, there's a lot more green tint, which I thought was kind of cool. And I really didn't get I guess we can do that later. But I also love just how the theme of love was so much bigger in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't Neo was the chosen one. It was together, their partnership when they were combined was more powerful. I thought was really cool.
And that's the kind of the message that Lana wanted to come back to, that what is the solution of our, these dark times? It's love. That's the strongest
coming
force.
Together.
That's the strongest force.
Yeah.
Neo and Trinity, their love wanting to come together is stronger than anything.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It sounds jaded and cliche, and she knows that. She recognizes it, but it's true. And she found that with her love for her parents.
Yeah.
Passed away. Yeah. This might be a good time, because we're already 45 minutes in, if you can believe it, to come to your questions. So what are some things that were confusing to you that maybe I can explain and then create some aha moments, perhaps?
Maybe we could do like rapid fire. So I'll just ask a question as a noob, Matrix noob, and okay. You can, as the master of the Matrix, you can...
It might be difficult to rapid fire an answer to your questions, but sure, I'll try.
Okay. I still don't know what the Matrix is. Is it the real world or the fake world?
Matrix is an illusion, a fake world pulled over your eyes to turn humans into batteries.
Okay, so the real world, which is when we're in pods, that's not the Matrix.
Correct.
Okay.
And that is the real world.
Got it. Next question. The bird murmurations. What did that symbolize in the film?
I'm not sure what that was, honestly, but I think that was Neo kind of questioning his reality. Like, why are these birds flying around in these murmurations like this? And it doesn't seem quite real. But I don't know. It's a good question.
So it was a token to remind them of what world they were in, kind of like an Inception where...
No, I don't think
so. Okay, maybe I'm getting confused.
I think you're looking into it too much. But I really don't know, what was he thinking when he saw these bird murmurations? Maybe he felt trapped and the birds were free?
No, but she looked at it at the end. I think she was... Wasn't she standing on the roof and the bird murmurations came back and she saw them and she was like...
Okay.
She had this inspired look on her face.
Maybe it's something that she wants to remake, because they're talking about remaking the Matrix.
So maybe. She
wants to change,
but the bird murmurations at the beginning too, like Neo's looking out the window. Yeah, I don't know.
It may be the murmurations is a trademark of that version of the Matrix, and they're gonna change that. I don't know.
Who are the suits?
I think the suits that they're referring to are the agents. So remember, in the first trilogy, there is these agents that kind of kept everything status quo, like stopped any rebellions and whatnot. So I think those suits are a representation of the boss machines.
The machines,
yes,
okay.
The machines, but the boss machines. So the machines use the agents who are in suits to quell any uprising within the Matrix.
Okay.
So I think that, yeah.
The fire at the beginning, in the building, did that all happen? And if so, what was the purpose of Neo seeing Smith pick up that gun? And did Smith really kill Neo in that moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I don't think that he did, because the machines wanted to keep Neo alive. I think what happened was that explosion was real, because it was Morpheus trying to get Neo out of the building, but he failed.
Okay.
And as he was trying to get Neo out of the building, you know, the water is going off.
So it's kind of like the butterfly effect. He's resetting time, or the analyst is resetting time and going back.
I think so. I think, like, obviously the analyst was able to pull Neo out of that before he was able to get killed, because Agent Smith was freeing himself basically and wanted to kill Neo, because that's always what he wants to do. And so the analyst saved Neo because he wanted to keep him. But I don't know how he was able to pull Neo out of that situation into his living room, other than perhaps there was some sort of mirror. Maybe there was a mirror in the water that was pooling on the floor, and the analyst used that mirror, that reflection, as a portal, because all mirrors are portals in this Matrix version. So that's the only, I mean, I'm just coming up with that now, but I really don't know how the analyst pulled, because it didn't seem like he slipped into anything. But he's standing there, he's looking at the gun. No, he's sitting there looking at the gun, and then all of a sudden
You're talking about Smith.
Neo's looking at Smith.
Yeah.
Sitting on the floor looking at the gun, and then all of a sudden he's suddenly back in the therapist in the analyst room saying, "Wait, I just imagined all that."
But was Smith not aware of this world that he was in? Because he walks in and he was normal, and then all of a sudden he screams out, "Mr. Anderson," and he has this weird look on his eye, like he realizes who he is.
I think he realized a bit of who he was when he saw the gun. And before that...
But how? Like, did the gun just remind him of a past life? Like, as Agent Smith?
Yeah, as Agent Smith, he always carried that gun.
Uh-huh.
And so I think when he saw the gun on the ground... And he saw Neo running away in this different situation that he was used to. He was used to being the boss of this company called Deus Machina. He was on a leash. So we saw later on that he wants to escape the leash that the analyst put on him.
Yeah.
I mean, the analyst was able to keep Agent Smith docile and kind of like not aware of who he was, just like they did for Neo.
Mm.
But the question is, the movie doesn't answer was, why did they keep Agent Smith around in the first place? We thought that he was destroyed or purged at the end of movie 3.
Mm-hmm.
How did he survive? And why did machines keep him and have him on a leash in the first place?
Yeah.
They didn't answer that.
What about the white rabbit? What is that? Because I remember Bugs has a tattoo of a white rabbit and she showed it to him, Neo, at the beginning to get him through the door. I didn't understand.
Now, that's a reference that I thought would be obvious to anybody. And it's funny because I guess I'm so into it that it's not as obvious as it seems. Alice follows a white rabbit in the story Alice in Wonderland. And she follows a white rabbit down a rabbit hole into a crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
In Matrix 1, when Thomas Anderson is sitting at his computer trying to figure out who Morpheus is and what the Matrix is, he gets a message on his computer saying, "Wake up, Neo. The Matrix has you." And then he tries to answer on the computer saying, "I want to know what the Matrix is." And then the computer tells him, "Follow the white rabbit." And he doesn't know what that means. And then the computer says, "Knock, knock, Neo." This is the very beginning of Matrix 1.
So it's like a clue to come in.
Well, it says, "Knock, knock, Neo." And then he gets a knock on his door. He goes to his door. He opens it. And he gets an invitation from a guy he was doing illegal software for. So he sold some illegal software to him for cash. And then the guy says, "Oh, come to this party." And the girl he's with says, "Come on, it'll be fun." And as she turns, she has a tattoo of a white rabbit on her shoulder.
And so I see.
It was a clue for him to literally follow the girl with the white rabbit tattoo to a club where he meets Trinity for the first time.
Okay.
So that is a memory that he has, and he knows he needs to, quote unquote, follow the white rabbit to then eventually discover what the Matrix is. And they did it again in Matrix 4.
Okay, last question. The hair. Was that a bald cap? Because I don't think it was. I think he shaved his head.
I think they shaved their heads, yes.
But they could not have grown a full head of hair back.
In 6 months?
No, I don't think so. I mean, my hair grows back fast, let me tell you. But his hair, there's no way he could have grown all that in 6 months.
Well, I think he grew it out first. Filmed all the scenes of him with long hair first, and then he cut his hair for the scenes they were short. Yeah.
The end. Okay. Yeah. But then he did interviews recently on Stephen Colbert, and he has long hair again. So
because there's been enough time since they wrapped filming, and it's been like a year.
Okay.
At this point.
We'll have to look at pictures of Carrie-Anne Moss just to confirm, but yes.
But he was shot – there was paparazzi where they shot pictures of him getting out of a car, and he had a bald head.
Oh.
Yes. That's why I'm thinking that.
So that was not a bald cap. Okay, good to know. So I would give this movie a 7.
Oh, it's pretty high.
Yeah, 7. I would give it a 7. The cinematography was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The digital effects, mind-blowing. Good.
Okay. Yeah.
just that epic shot of Neo walking through the night streets as he's going to meet the analyst at the end. Just absolutely epic cinematography. Yeah. So good. The music, A+. Mm-hmm. Music was absolutely epic. That, yeah. So good. And the love story. Loved the theming, just the profound messaging of all the themes in this movie I thought were excellent.
Yeah.
The bad, acting. Some of the acting of some of the actors, you know, I'm talking Niobe, I'm talking Neo, you know, just really, really bad acting. Okay. The dialogue, I thought the script was not very good. I thought it was very, they played it safe. There was no interesting choices. Like just some of the interactions with the characters when they meet, it's just like, hello, nice to see you. Good to see you too again. Like it's just, it's very... very simple, a lot of it. And I feel like they could have gone further with the script, with the dialogue. They could have taken more chances.
That's interesting because I don't agree about that at all. I thought it was a pretty witty, fast, clever banter.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there were some moments that was kind of, I don't know, lukewarm. But then what are you supposed to say? I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought there was no originality. It was a lot of repeated plots, recycling content. Makeup was terrible. And the ending was very rushed. I remember being in the theater and it just felt like it was zooming by. But then we saw it just now again and I thought it was a lot better. But I think that's because I knew what was coming.
Yeah, but it still felt a little bit rushed at the end. I mean, it was very cathartic to see them go back to the analyst and like kick his ass.
Oh,
basically.
That was great.
That
yeah.
was really
that was
fun.
Cool. It was a good ending.
Neil Patrick Harris is very talented at getting his ass kicked and making us feel good about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
What would you give it? What's your rating and what did you think were the good and the bad?
I hate to say it, but 10 out of 10.
You're so biased.
I know I'm biased. And it's weird so because you'd think, you know, I can't give a 10 out of 10 if there are things that are not perfect. Yeah, but it's the Matrix. I can't help it. Like I really liked Revolutions also, even though it was less fun than the other ones. I mean, I think, I don't know. Revolutions was great. Resurrections was great. Reloaded and the original Matrix will always be my favorite of all time. Those would be like 11 or 12 out of 10, perhaps. But I just, the action could have been better. And the ending could have been like had a bit more time. I do feel like they had to, I feel like
just 10 more minutes.
Yeah. Like they had some sort of time constraint and I'm sure they filmed more scenes and they just cut it out because they couldn't do otherwise.
It felt cut up and
rushed.
Needed
to get everything in there. But yeah, I mean like the music, like you said, was amazing. That was a major point for me. I was very worried about it because the music in the original trilogy with Don Davis was just incredible. I listened to that soundtrack on repeat so many times. And so
I can imagine
really
high school Alex.
Yeah.
listening to his
iPod.
A lot
of people did. No, CDs. My CD player.
CD,
my Walkman.
Your little Walkman. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be carrying it and then, you know, would skip because you're shaking it a bit.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day. Yeah, the new guys who... Johnny Klimek and Tom Tykwer, I think, were the duo who did it this time, and they did an excellent job. And it would not be The Matrix without the music that they put. So great job with that. That really brings you into the story. I liked the pacing. I liked the music. I liked a lot of it. Like I thought it was really great. So yeah, 10 out of 10.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, babe, for having me on your show. It was an honor to be on your podcast to talk about The Matrix. It was really fun. I'm really glad I got to see your excitement when we went to the movie theater together. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you, Helena, for being on, and we really appreciate it. It's really interesting to hear, I think we had a really nice banter between like a super fan and someone who knows very little to next to nothing about it to have. And we both had a good review in the end of this film. So that's really great. So Helena, where can we find you online? I always ask my guests about this.
I feel like most of your audience will not be interested in my content, but I am a YouTuber and a blogger, HelenaWoods.com. My YouTube channel is Helena Woods. I make slow living films about nature and beauty and presence and mindfulness. And very different from cyberpunk sci-fi genre. But I do want to end my portion on this note. A quote from a quote that Bugs said that I really resonate with.
Okay. Go ahead.
The choice is an illusion. You already know what you have to do. That sums up everything about me that you need to know.
Okay. And that matches kind of the same kind of quotes that we had before, which was, you don't need to make the choice. You already made it. This is what the Oracle said. You need to understand why you made the choice.
Yeah. And if anyone would like to know their own destiny, you can book an astrology reading with me at helenawoods.com. I give zodiacal releasing astrology readings that tell you the chapters of your life. The choice is an illusion. You've already done this before.
Well, to be properly cyberpunk, you have to be open to all kinds of different things and all kinds of different areas. So there you go. Thank you so much, Helena, for coming on the show. This has been the Cyberpunk Matrix Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything cyberpunk. Catch us on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. So yeah, this has been your host, Alex, over and out.
You have just been in the cyberspace with your host, Alex. Welcome back to the desert of the real. If your upload was smooth, leave a 5-star review on iTunes and subscribe for more content.